You're listening to The Purple Mystic, a podcast for the modern witch, with your host, Natalie Sedgwick. And welcome back to The Purple Mystic podcast for the modern witch. Today I have the wonderful honor of talking with Laura Zagaroff. Good morning, Laura. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Actually, I think it's morning for me, afternoon for you, but
well. It just crossed over, so.
Time zones. So one of the things that I really, really wanted to talk with you about was something that so inspired me during the pandemic, and that was your ritual workouts. I really liked that. I'm not a workout person, clearly. but you know, during the pandemic, when I was stuck working from home, being at home, you know, my day job is speech pathology, and you'd be surprised how frequently our motivators consist of food. So when you're at home and you're working teletherapy with people, you great. I mean, I found myself just and not moving a lot because I was sitting in a chair, one client after another, whereas normally I get up and I'm walking around the facility and I'm grabbing people. And this was just one after another. So I wasn't even getting up out of the chair. And right. Your ritual workouts were fantastic for getting me moving and getting me up out of the seat. And I loved how you tied it into the spiritual aspect. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about how you became inspired to do that and how you came up with the various rituals that you were infusing the movement with.
Sure. So I started it because I was recognizing the same, you know, normally in non-pandemic times, I am traveling, I am performing with my partner and teaching workshops, getting up, moving, hauling stuff around, right? And I realized, like, I don't feel so good because I'm not moving. And, you know, it's like, oh, is it too hot to go out for a walk or to bike or such? And I thought, well, if I get up and record something so that, you know, I'm moving, but I'm also sort of beholden to other people who might be also wanting to participate in it, it was a very good incentive to put those things together. So incorporating what I would normally teach in my workshops or when I used to do weekly dance classes, that was kind of one thing of like, how do you do this in a YouTube format, right? Where I can't tell you, like, oh, you're standing wrong, right? Or your posture needs to be adjusted. So thinking about it simply and effectively so that people can get it and also not feel intimidated. And I set it up with, it started off every day of the week, which was a bit ambitious. But we had themes of Monday was lunar and Tuesday was either tarot or oracle, Wednesday deity, Thursday tarot or oracle, Friday was a free day, and then the kind of more into spellcraft and other types of ritual on the Saturdays and Sundays. And then I realized that I still need a break. I'm a workaholic, so I need to give it a little bit of a breathing space. So we moved to 5 days mostly, though we're kind of a little bit on a hiatus right now because I went through getting the current book ready for publishing as well as a new oracle deck. So it was like, all right, to wake up in the morning and go, all right, I have to think about what are we going to do for movement when I like, I have 2,000, 6,000 words to do today and 20 paintings, you know, like, so we're going to get back into that.
So let's talk a little bit about the book. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
So what I know that I'm trying to get my hands on your sigil witchery book. I've had it on my wish list for eons and a decade, and the family doesn't take the hint. So I'm buying it myself for myself. But what is the topic of this book? Is it something along the same lines of your other books, or is it something completely different?
I'd say it goes into the realm of completely different, though most tangentially related to Weave the Liminal. So the new book is Anatomy of a Witch, A Map to the Magical Body. And it does incorporate a lot of concepts that I talk about in the witchful workouts. So how to engage with your body and see it as one of the most powerful tool you have is your body, and how to be present in your practice and just more conscious of what you're doing. We have a tendency to you know, fixate on all the stuff, which the stuff is great. I like stuff, you know, all the shiny things and all the books and all that. But this is, you know, magical practice is an experimental and experiential practice. So regardless of your age or your ability or your gender, being conscious of what does it mean to be present in your body can really amp up your ritual and your magical practice and just make you feel more empowered.
It's funny that you bring that up because I'm a member of the OBOD. I'm in the OVATE group currently. And not to give away anything that's in the gorge, but movement is playing a big role in this particular, you know, in the Bardic grade, you're learning about music and art and how that ties into your practice. And now it's more into the physical of movement and being aware of your body and space. And I think we live in a time when we're just so busy that mindfulness and being aware of where your body is in space is lost. And as a speech pathologist, I work with a lot of kids who have really poor proprioception. They really have a very poor sense of where their body is in space and how that affects you. And I think it's something we take for granted. So that was another reason that I found your workouts to be so unique and really beneficial, because you become more aware of how movement affects the energetic field around you and how you can shift. You know, when you're sensitive to people and their emotions and things like that, you can alter your space by shifting your body position. And I think that your videos kind of brought that out a little bit. It's not something that's talked about a lot. So I'm really hoping to see some of that in your book, that's really going to be something people need to be aware of.
Absolutely.
A lot of talk about being empathic. And
you know. Yeah. Well, the book goes with these five kind of systems that relate to the biological body, so that you can have these magical practices, but you can have very tangible physical effects. And it starts with breath, the witch lungs. And the breathing exercises, which are very simple, they're not very complicated. I don't like heavily complicated stuff because I feel like you can lose people's attention. And it's hard for different people's learning styles as well. And so starting with that simple acknowledgement of breath gets you into your body so fast. And then it builds on there, and to be more conscious of your posture and how you're sitting, to look at, you know, what's going on with your daily ritual and how does that make you feel? Whether it's, you know, people get really like, oh gosh, how am I going to do a daily ritual? Like, you're already brushing your teeth in the morning. You're already probably having a hot beverage of some sort or a cold beverage. You probably are cleaning yourself in some way. Why can't these be your part of your daily ritual and add a sense of magic to it instead of being, oh, I need to do some complicated ritual in order for it to mean something?
Right. I think that's something that people don't understand or they don't think about. I think they figure that ritual has to be something highly stylistic and fantastical, and it needs to look very Hollywoodish, when really ritual can be something so very simple as just lighting a candle and taking 2 minutes to focus on the flame in your breathing, and that can totally shift your mindset for the entire day.
Definitely.
Which is why I really enjoyed your videos, because it really helped me to remember that. You know, I mean, it's something that we all give lip service to. It's not something we all do on a daily. And I really found that was helpful to have that back to kind of really focus on that. I wanted to talk a little bit about your sigil magic book as well, because that's one I'm trying to get my hands on. But I know you've done some workshops on creating sigils and things like that, because I think that's also a very powerful form of magic that sort of gets passed over. You hear about spare sigils a lot, but yours are much more artistic, and I really like them. I lack artistic skill, so mine are lots of letters.
Well, the great thing about the method that I develop and use and teach to other people is that you don't need to be an artist, and you probably already have a built-in system of meanings of symbols, of marks, of letters, of things, right? Like, we tend to think, oh, I have to go learn this obscure magical alphabet you know, how many people have like have carved letters on an athame and then we're like, I don't really remember what it says. I carved it 6 years ago, right? Because they haven't looked at it again since they you know, pulled it out of some other book. But, you know, if you're a computer programmer, you have computer programming language, which is what's on the keyboard and what does that mean? If you are a dancer, you might have different notology on that. You might have, you know, if you've learned a different language as well, you know, especially growing up, if you have Japanese, like in your background, right? Those, all of these things have meaning and symbols to them. So the method is about looking at what your magical problem is. It's step one for all magical things, right? To like, what's your problem? Before you do anything, what do you need to accomplish?
Why are you, what's your goal? Yeah.
What are you doing? It's like, there's, you know, I think there's a lot of newbies who are like, I'm going to cast a spell. Like, well, what do you, why? Yeah, just to do the thing. And which is fine when we're figuring things out. But as you're going on, it's a waste of energy to, unless you know what you're looking for. So I always say, figure out step one. Step two is brainstorming, which is to really start to clarify, what is it? How would you see that solution? So if you're doing something to get a new job, it's not, I want a new job and you burn a green candle. It's saying, I want to make X amount of money. I want health benefits. I want it to be half an hour where I live. I want it to be a better, healthier environment for me. Like, what does that look like for you so that you start to visualize it? And then you pair up those concepts with the symbols, the marks, and the cedra, and design the sigil from there. And so it is more of an intuitive process, but it's a highly visual process in the sense that you really are learning to manifest. Like, it's, the power isn't necessarily in the marks. It is starting to put onto paper what the idea of that solution is looking like. And it helps to remind you and your body and the universe that this is what we want to manifest.
Right. It's the whole as above, below connection. Mm-hmm. Taking it from the ethos and putting it physically in front of you, but in a concise manner that allows you to trigger that visualization. The minute you look at that symbol, you're like, that's it. That's what I want.
Yes.
It's everything that I ever wanted in a symbol. And I really appreciate that kind of powerful magic, because you could write it on the palm of your hand with your finger, and then it's with you, you know, and all you have to do is just, you know, look at your palm and you can visualize that symbol, and everything that you need is right there. And it keeps you from like settling for something that's less that may come your way. And that's not to say that if something comes your way, you shouldn't take that if you're
right.
A job. Please take the job that comes your way. But at the same time, it doesn't mean you have to stop looking if it's not the ideal that you have in your mind. It's a stepping stone. Yeah. And I really think that that's one of the most powerful forms of magic that just gets glossed over. So I was excited to stumble upon your book sometime back. And it's been on that wish list. But with the whole COVID thing, it's been So talk to me a little bit about how you came to your practice. I think a lot of people are very interested in hearing about how one comes to their path. Were you raised in a magical practice, or was it something you came to later in life?
I would say it's a mixture of that. I would point to my upbringing as being fairly weird in some ways. My parents are very creative people. I am the product of a basically Italian, Sicilian, Catholic, and Russian Slavic Jew. So you've got that first combination of minds. And they have very, both my parents were journalists. They majored in journalism and very creative in theater and such. So kind of had a slightly different look at the world than most of my peers. And I also spent a lot of time alone in the backyard playing with nature and, you know, just seeing how things were and collecting herbs and stuff. So it's like I was already doing the Little Witch in the Little Witch House back then. But I didn't really know that there was a name for it, even though I was like into all of the Mysteries of the Unknown books that were popular and, you know, Egyptology and, you know, all ancient cultures and such, until in my early teens, I discovered Drawing Down the Moon, which to me looked like the most serious book on the New Age shelf, because a lot of the covers, especially in the 90s, you know, are very very fantasy cover. They look like the same stuff that you found down the way in the fantasy aisle. So I'm like, am I supposed to take this seriously? They're like, oh, Drawing Down the Moon, NPR reporter. All right. And so that was my sort of key into that there are people still doing these things and interested in this stuff today. And of course, the resource section that was in the back of Drawing Down the Moon. So that was the kind of opening up the gateway. It was also the early days of the internet. So starting to find people online and IRC and The Witch's Voice was a few years later than that, but, you know, all of that stuff coming together of just going, yes, this is the name for how I see the world, and there are other people doing it. So from that kind of weird doing my own thing to realize, hi, fellow weirders, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't it nice when you find other people that are as weird as you? Yay! That's kind of how I felt with Cauldron Born by Dave the Bard. You know, the first time I heard that song, I was like, I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
There are other people out there. You know, yes, definitely. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I appreciate how commercial some things are today. The problem is, I think it also makes things very vanilla in terms of, you know, you get when you read a lot of the books, you see a lot of the same stuff, which is why I appreciate your work, because it seems to tackle things from a very different perspective. It's obvious you have a lot of discipline, which is what I think is lacking. I don't want to say gatekeeping per se, but I mean, there's just a lot of misinformation that gets around, or kind of you must do this, but don't do that. And if you do that, you're bad, or it's wrong, or it's whatever. Yeah. And I think that you kind of come at it from there are certain things that are innate within us that we do already. That just speaks to how we are as people.
Yes.
How it's natural within us, but you need the discipline, and here's some framework to work from. And that's what I really appreciated. I also really enjoyed listening to you on my sister podcast of This Old Witch. You know, I learned a lot from you there. So what was your very first book that you wrote?
So the first book that has been published, I guess I will put it in that category, because I wrote for Crescent Magazine for many, many years, going back into the late 90s. But the first book was The Witch's Cauldron, which is part of Llewellyn's Witch's Tool series. And the funny thing is, that wasn't the book I was intending to write. I had already proposed a book on the intersection of art and magic to Llewellyn. And they're like, yes, please write this book and send it to us. And I'm like, I'll get on that. And I was sort of stressing myself out about it, right? Like, this is something I'm really passionate about, but having experienced especially a lot of stuff in the 90s and early O's, going, do I really want to put this out there? And then when The Witch's Cauldron, the proposal a friend had shared, like, hey, are you interested in writing cauldrons? I'm like, I love cauldrons. This seems like a fun little book. You know, it's that thing where you go, I know a lot about this, and let's just put it out there. It's a cute little book. It's 50,000 words or so, somewhere. And that was a great way of, you know, getting into it, especially to see, knowing that I was coming at a lot of the myths and the symbolism as drastically different viewpoint than so much of the stuff that's been put out there. Like, you know, if you could scan those early websites, like, the cauldron is a womb. I'm like, am I cooking something in my womb? maybe not. And people of all genders use cauldrons, you know, so kind of breaking away from some of the misinterpretations of those myths and opening up to more people and concepts. And to see that that was so well received kind of opened the doors to the rest of the stuff that I wanted to write. So Sigil Witchery was the next book after that.
Now, did that end up being the metamorphosis of the book concept you had originally? Because Sigil Witchery involves a lot of artistic creative powers, although, like you said, you don't have to be artistic. It's taking things that you are already familiar with and putting them together to create something that represents a concise thought. But did that end up becoming sort of, did you put some of those elements into that book, or do you still plan on putting that book out there?
It is incorporated to some, like the history part of Sigil Witchery. So the first chapter is all about looking at mark making in history, because you know, especially in Western occultism, we tend to look at, well, sigils, you know, clearly, you know, Austin Spare and ceremonial magic and the grimoire tradition. Like, yes, but we have been making marks on walls for over 50,000 years, and those things have meaning and magical practice, and it's around the world. So let's look at mark making as far beyond this small little kind of white demographic. And so incorporating that into it. But I actually will be turning in the first draft for a book that is called Visual Alchemy. It's sort of Sigil Witchery 2.0, but really delving into the magic of art and why sigils work in some ways and how the lines work and intriguing parts of our brains to work, as well as our bodies, like movement and shape and such. So it's not quite still the same thing, but it's kind of dissected itself into other books in little chunks. Which is sometimes that's the better way for it to go, right? You have an idea and there's a reason why it gets put on hold. Like, right. We have the Liminal. That was the book I started writing almost 20 years ago. It died in a hard drive failure. Spectacularly.
Oh, that's devastating, though. At the time, I'm sure you were like,
yeah. Yeah, it was like the motherboard fried and the hard drive fried. Everything went. And still there.
Sorry, yeah, I'm here. I was calling in on the business line, so they can hold it. I'll tell you, those hard drive failures are just absolutely devastating. But it does happen for a reason.
Yeah, like I am so glad that I didn't finish that book at that point, because I've had all of this time and experience to go through and to really consider what is it in my practice and what would be helpful for other people. Like I had you know, a lot of the same things, like it's almost the same, a lot of the same notes that I had, but I just have such a deeper perspective. And you know, being like a mid 20-year-old asshole at the time, right?
Yeah, are we all kind of that way at 20?
Yeah, it's like I'm like, oh, that I you know, oh, it's in print, you know, so at least, you know, there's another sense of maturity that comes into it at this point in my 40s that I feel better putting that in the world. Now, of course, we check in me when I'm 60, and how do I feel about the books right now? We'll see, but hopefully it's a better
fit. It would be interesting to see 20 years from now how your views on some of your writing would differ, like to have you do a different version of something that you've talked about, to see that maturity, because we do change as we grow older, and mm-hmm. and things that we once thought were so vital and important, and that's just part of the maturation process. I mean, it's true, like when you first get in, when people are first admitting to themselves who they are and mm-hmm. begin to openly practice the craft, you start absorbing everything you can like a little sponge, right? And then after you've read everything you think you can absorb, you start to put into play some of those practices, and you really have that pressure, I think, as someone who's new to the craft, to do everything right. It has to be exactly right, you know, the right time of the day and the right moon phase and the right sun phase, and you know, and you got to have all the right color candles. And then, you know, as you get older, you're kind of like, it's my intent, has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. I can make this work and this work because I'm doing this and this. And it becomes more a part of who you are. You just do it. You don't stop and focus as much on, again, the high stylistic qualities of things. It's more coming from within. And I think that's kind of what makes it so different as we get older. So it would be really good to see how some of those views have changed.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to maybe in like at like the 10-year anniversary of Weave the Liminal to be able to tap in and see, especially because looking at the time, it'd be interesting to see as a society what has changed, like, you know, going through sort of this witch boom of what's going on, which I think overall is a wonderful thing that more and more people are aware of magic and power and you know, being connected to the land around them. But also, you know, considering that, you know, Weave Liminal's written 2016 into 17, a little bit into 18, I think, and just the turmoil, you know, and what we've been through in the last 4 years, and how is that going to change in the next 4 years and such. So I'm interested and fascinated. I'm just kind of keeping little notes in the back of my brain of like, what would I change? What did I tweak a little bit?
How would I create? So aside from the ritual of movement and dance, what are some other ways that you incorporate magic into your daily living? You know, kind of your normal routine.
I always go outside, which this does seem like a revolutionary thing, but even especially in New England, it can be to be like, I'm going to go outside, I'm going to sit, I'm going to observe the world around me, and just breathe and be still for a little bit. But the major part of my practice is through my art. Is my most immediate form of magic in many ways, to sit, to draw, to kind of tell stories, connect with myth, connect with deities. And so a really good day, a good couple of days, is being able to sit down and to create something in that way. It has been something that's been a part of my life since I was very little. I started going to art school at 3. So to be able to sit down, there's something calming about whether it's drawing or painting or doing something that's a craft-like aspect of it, whether like today I sand at wood for panels that are going to be people's prints. And there's a meditation that comes in that. There's also a trance-like state that happens. And I know that's not something easy for everybody, but I think a lot of people do have that in some way when they're, you know, whatever that you do, when you get into that state of zen, for lack of a better word, right? That happy functional trance-like state where you're like, I'm kind of at peace with everything and I'm exploring and trying things out and experimenting. And it just feels like I'm in the right spot. I'm doing something that feels good for me as well as possibly the world at the same time.
Yes, exactly. And when I teach my beginning meditation class, that's one of the first things I talk about, is that meditation doesn't have to be just sitting in the lotus position and oming. Gardening is a form of meditation. Crocheting is a form of meditation, because it's that repetitive movement that alters you from one brain state to another, and that you can thereby get things. I know my grandmother used to see things when she would sew or when she would crochet. Visions would come to her. And I think it has to do with that repetitive motion of being relaxed and allowing your mind to just not have to think so much, as to just shift into that state of half consciousness or altered state of consciousness. And so singing is for me a big thing. You know, when I sing, I'm dead to the world. And reading also shifts my consciousness. So, you know, it's interesting to see how different people achieve that state. And I wish I could say art was my thing, because I love art. But I can't draw a stick person that looks like a person. So it makes some of that stuff that we've talked about a little hard for me.
Well, you know, we would call it a daily practice, right? It's something that we apply ourselves to. But again, we all have our different outlets. So my partner is a musician. And so it's, you know, hearing the violin scales or different bass lines going through, you know, it's just that sit down. That it's like whatever it is that you do is a totally valid way. And I wish more people recognize that instead of, again, thinking it needs to be something huge and special and you know, it can be really simple. Taking care of other people, right?
Yeah, taking a walk even can be very almost ritualistic in a way.
Yes. You
know? Just getting out and just counting the number of steps you're taking and focusing on your breathing while you're walking, while also being aware of your surroundings. I would hate for somebody to get frustrated, but it can be very fulfilling in terms of allowing some of that magical practice to come out. You know, walk in magic is something I tell people a lot of times, and they look at me like I'm nuts. So, but it has a meaning. I mean something by it. And I like to look at art. I like to, I would like to be able to create something that looks like art. And so I'm always in awe of people such as yourself that have that natural creative gift to be able to come out and just create something that embodies your magic, because a bit of you is in that creation. Mm-hmm. And so it's always fun to admire that in others. Now, are you you said you also have an Oracle deck that's coming out. You want to talk about that a little bit as well?
Yes. Yeah, so this one, it's it feels like it's a long game. It's probably coming out in summer of 2022, which really isn't that far. You know, we're like about a year. But it's based off of, so as I was writing Anatomy of a Witch, it was very much tied into a lot of the artwork and seeing imagery as I was writing the book. And I thought, well, this would be an amazing way to use an oracle that allows you to also work with problems that are happening in your body, in your psyche, in your spirituality, your practice, right? To orient it with that. And so I created a deck that's based on the Anatomy of a Witch. Though you don't have to read the book to use the deck. It will come with its own little book. But it looks at many different practices of looking at spellcraft, the different actions of spellcraft, of ritual, different parts of our bodies and how you can tap into those. And also looking at the world around you. So the lunar cycles and some of the solar festivals and such. So you can use it as a daily practice tool. You can use it for meditation. You can use it for spellcraft. It just has a multiple different meanings to it. And there's also like a little prescription for the card too. So when you get it, not only is there the art that will be speaking to you, and the possible messages of what is encompassed within that word. But there's also, have you thought about maybe doing this? So that if you need something, if you need that little push to get up and to dance, to light a candle, to consider what's important for your practice, to do something, it spurs you into action as well.
Very good. Now, when you wrote the book, so you said the Oracle deck kind of came from the book. Is this the first kind of project of that type you've done, or do you have other decks out there that maybe you haven't?
There's the Liminal Spirits Oracle, which came out last year, which seems like it's kind of related to Weave the Liminal, because the word liminal is in both of them, but this is the Liminal Spirits Oracle. Really came into its own. It started as a group of paintings that I was doing where I was thinking, okay, what would the mushroom spirit look like? And what would a stag spirit look like? Like, what are these things that I often see in my head and create paintings of, but like say, this is specifically for that. And I had such a good time doing those first six or so paintings that I was like, this would be a fun deck. I want, you know, that's the thing you want, at least for artists, but I would hope on the other side of it as someone using a deck is that someone enjoyed the process of it and didn't just phone it in. Like, there's a lot of decks out there. You're like, did you just pick whatever was there? Like, there's not a lot of thought involved. So with that deck I worked with, I narrowed it down. It was really hard to do it, but there are 42 different spirits that you can tap into those specific spirits, but you can also use them as a gateway to other spirits. And so again, a very different approach to working with an oracle than most of the ones out there.
Absolutely. And are you writing? Okay. I know sometimes when people create decks, they have someone who does the write-up for them and they do the art. Are you doing both the write-up
Yes.
and the art? Is it your interpretation of your own work, or is it someone else's interpretation of your work?
It is all me, because I'm a glutton for punishment now. because this is the Gemini thing. Like, I make the art, I make the words, I make the words, I make the art. So they kind of go hand in hand.
I think that's better, because I often wondered, you know, when people were doing a write-up for a tarot deck, I'm sure there's collaboration between the artist and the person writing up the deck, but I often wonder, is it that the person's like me and they couldn't create the artwork to go with the concept they had in their mind, so they kind of wrote it out and then had somebody draw what they were reading, or is it the opposite where the person creates the pictures and then somebody comes in and says, well, this is my interpretation, this is how I see this, you know, it's kind of, I'm always curious about that process. The creative process fascinates me, especially in areas where I would like to be creative and am not. Because I'm a writer. I love to write. I write every day, even if it's just a sentence or two. Mm-hmm. I carry notebooks with me all the time. I write things down constantly. And I have a million different ideas running through my head at once. But I am not a person who can take those writings and translate them into something that's visually appealing, per se. So that was a process I was always curious about. So it's good. It's good for me to hear that it's your concepts, because in a case like yours, that's what I would want as a reader, if that makes sense.
The all of my books I have illustrated except for the first one, which is The Witch's Cauldron, because that was already an established series. So Mickey Mueller had done, you know, The Witch's Broom and The Mirror and The Athame and all that such. So they wanted it consistent. Though Mickey did a fantastic job of, like, I sent her drawings and photos of what I wanted, and she, you know, really interpreted them in the right way, which is, you know, it was a kind of a moment of like, what is this going to look like? And it's great to have another artist. You're like, okay, we're very much, you know, seeing the same things, and this fits. I feel though, it is really fascinating. You need to see like how many decks are done because the writer created the thing, and then the artist is hired, or the artist started with some art samples, and then they hired the writer to go with it. I definitely, as an artist, I don't know how I feel about somebody else unless I know, like, you totally get my stuff. Great. You can write it.
That's kind of what I have as a writer, because I'm not an illustrator. And, like, my first book was a children's book that I wrote. And I wanted my daughter to illustrate for me, because my kids are all extraordinarily talented when it comes to drawing. But we couldn't agree eye to eye on the concept of the art behind the book. And I got frustrated, and I feel bad even now that I was upset with her, because she was interpreting it her way, you know, which is what an artist does, right? And I was going, but that's not what I had in mind. And I feel horrible about that, because I should just take what she gave me and said, thank you very much. But I have a concept for a tarot deck that I've had in my head for some time. And I've even kind of done a little bit of a write-up on some, but I cannot create the art. And it's something that, to me, is very important, that it embodies the spirit of what I'm wanting it to embody, because it's a matter of respect for me about the theme of the tarot deck. So, for someone who can match that concept has been a little challenging. And I don't want to just put it out there for the general public, you know, because it is very precious to me and important to me. So, you know, I definitely think it's interesting to see how people join those ideas when it's too different. So I kind of figured you probably did your own, because I think that you're one of those people that you like it to be exactly what you want it to be.
A little bit of, not to say a control freak, but I like, I'm not very good at delegating.
Yeah, I was avoiding that term, because I don't consider that a control freak thing. I mean, it's perfectly understandable that you have a concept, and when you create a piece of art, it has certain thoughts and feelings and images behind it, and you don't want it to be misinterpreted through someone else's means, you know? So I don't think that's control freak so much as making sure that your vision and your statement that's through your vision is being properly communicated.
Right. Attention to detail.
Yes, very much so. Very, very much so. So after you get your Oracle deck out and going, and your next book comes out, what's in line for you then?
That's a great question.
I haven't even thought about that yet.
No.
The pressure's on. What you gonna do?
You know, it's been such a strange, you know, year and a half. So back in mid-2019, I moved from Seattle to Rhode Island. So that was like huge.
Wow, shift. That's a change.
Yeah, big shift. Now I own a home. Like, yay. Wow. How did that happen? You know, so that's like, okay, now get settled. And I was getting all ready to get, you know, like all of our obligations for the rest of the year and the touring and traveling. And like, and now 2020, we're really going to tour. Nope. You know, the pandemic really shifted that. And I don't know what things really are going to be like when it comes to, you know, Yes, things are improving right now, but is it going to stay that way into the fall for health-wise? And what does it mean for the venues? So many venues and places, some of the bookstores I used to travel to are no longer physical bookstores anymore. So
Right.
that, 'cause I really do, I don't want to tour extensively. That's another thing that this last year's taught me is I don't want to be on the road for 6 weeks anymore. I want to do little excursions. That was another thing about moving to New England is that I can hit so many different places in 1 to 2 hours, even 3 hours away, where in Seattle, the closest major next major city was Portland. That was 3 hours away. And then to California, it's the Bay Area is 14 hours away. It's like that's
And then you come to
just
Texas and it's like 10 to 12 hours to the next
yeah.
beach.
You're just like, I haven't even left the state yet, right? You're just
Like,
like, we're
are
just
we
here.
still in Texas? Yeah.
We went to pick up a kitten, and we went through, Rhode Island and Massachusetts and to New Hampshire. Like we did that in under like an hour and a half. Like we've gone through three states already. That's amazing. So being able to kind of build community and do little traveling, I'm hoping that will be the thing. But it's like in terms of what's next in projects, I'm just going to see what inspiration leads because I'm enjoying the process more instead of like running around so much. Because there's more art that I want to create. I keep people are like, when are you going to do a tarot? I'm like, well, when I really am excited. Like, I love.
Right. When I have the right concept and it speaks to me that the time is right, then I will do. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm going to sit down for 78 cards and really, do the honor to the system. Because I love tarot so much. And I have spawned, like, I did a little tarot back in college and a little Lady of Shalott inspired Major Arcana deck, and like I can think of dozens of like decks where like this would be really cool, but like yes, that's why there are so many Major Arcana decks and not as many decks because they're like eh.
Well, I wanted to ask you if that was your favorite. What's your favorite form of divination?
My go-to really is the tarot. I do enjoy. I do use my own decks, so that is good when it comes to the oracle. But I found that there's a lot of decks out there where I don't connect with the art or go, where at least with the tarot, if it's going off of the Rider-Waite-Smith variation, and I am connecting to the art or the content or the spin of it, like the deck that I've used the longest was also my first deck. It still talks is Legend of the Arthurian Tarot. It's the Llewellyn version of it because I was also studying at the time all of the Arthurian legends, so the Fairy Queen and the Green Knight and La Mort d'Arthur and all of those things, like getting immersed in the myth and then having the myths to tell on top of the tarot meanings. So I love the storytelling aspect of that. And I think for me, when I'm creating a deck, like I have to think about what is the story that I want to tell that will also be accessible to other people. Because I don't want to create a deck that's just for me. If I'm going to put it out in the world, I want it to be something that a lot of people can use and find beneficial, and it's going to be their go-to deck.
Right. And that's understandable. I think that's kind of the dream for a lot of people that are artists that create tarot decks is you want something that people can connect with. And I know for myself personally, if I don't connect with the artwork of a deck, it doesn't work for me. I mean, it's just, I'm like, it's nothing. It's funny because I had someone that gifted me a deck and it was something that, I'm a bit of a feminist, obviously. I'm a female and I have three daughters and I own two businesses and what have you. So very strong females, and that's what was kind of the theme of this deck. I was just sitting here looking at it going, I get nothing out of this. It was really kind of disappointing. And I set it aside for a long time. And then I thought, well, I'm going to start using it for spellcraft. And when I pulled it out, it was different. Suddenly it was as if somebody had parted a curtain. But I still don't really like the deck because I don't really connect with the artwork. It's not what I like. But I've had decks that I thought, oh man, that's going to be a great deck when I first kind of saw it. And then once I got it in my hands, I was like, eh, eh. The artwork to me is very important in tarot because I think you get all of those subtle messages that come out through some of the small things that are in the artwork that a normal person might just get and go, okay, this is an interesting picture, but there are certain things that have meaning that pop up in the cards that I think ordinary, I don't want to say ordinary people, but people who don't practice with tarot would miss entirely. So yeah, artwork very important in that, definitely. Do you use other forms of divination in conjunction with that? I mean, do you work with like crystals or anything of that nature?
I do. I love collecting the things.
I got too many crystals, said no witch ever.
So yeah, oh, shiny things, you know, it's like I'm, you know, as a kid, I love collecting shells and rocks. So like that part has never changed. I'm like, they're neat and they're beautiful and they're tactile. I don't tend to get too overly focused on like the powers of the crystals and such. Like some people are totally into that. I'm like, it's a very beautiful visual thing. And some things have slight energies to them. But when it comes to other systems, I find it's like, well, what am I doing on a daily basis? And I'm most likely going to pull a card. So I would say that connection to an oracle deck or a tarot deck, but I also just get a lot of, you know, psychic impressions from the world around me and in many different, all the word is out of my head.
Is it like
the clairs. Sorry. The clairs, I was like, I'm like, yes. You know, it's an AI. I'm like, my brain was going to the first part. So the different kinds of the clairs. And so that tends to be more of an influence. So at some point I'd like to create another, like a little physical oracle of, you know, like kind of like a bone set. I've never gotten along with runes.
They don't do anything for me either. So don't feel bad. I'll use them sometimes in my sigils. Like if it has a specific meaning and I'm gunning for that, I might incorporate it, but I don't, they don't do much for me.
Yeah. I know for a pendulum is very helpful for a lot of folks, but again, it's like I'm already going to my gut instinct and what I'm already feeling. And maybe that just comes to that. Maybe it is. It's a lot to do with your body, right? When you're listening to the signs within your body, which is another thing we cover in Anatomy of the Witch, is what I call the serpent. And it is the more primal aspect of ourself. It's all of those senses that we are picking up through our gut. Right. And the things that go beyond what our eyes are seeing that we're really picking up through that kind of reptilian part of our brains, you know, and the tools are ways to help filter that, to kind of step out of yourself a little bit and kind of check your perspective. So, you know, in my favorite things, though, it's going to be just, you know, pulling a card or seeing what random things the universe drops in my lap.
Right. What does today hold? Yeah, I long for the day when I can wake up and feel that way. It seems like since this last year, it's been one just thing after another. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, So that's the time to turn again. That's when I go back and I'll pop up one of your videos. I'll go back to your playlist. I'll go like, okay, I think I'm going to try this one today and see if that doesn't get me back into my feeling space where I can open my channels. Because I think people forget that when you kind of freak out over things going on in life, it sets off that reptilian brain mm-hmm. in a bad way. It wakes up the dragon, which cuts off the higher level thinking. And so we sit in that state of panic and we just panic more. So once we start moving, it's like singing the dragon back to sleep, and it allows us to kind of allow our feelings and everything to flow again, and gets us back into that state of, well, now I can come up with solutions because now I can move. I don't feel stuck. So I really have prized those videos. I saved the entire playlist. But I think that's an important concept that's not talked about a lot. And that's why I was really excited about getting to talk to you about that. There's art in movement,
mm-hmm.
and it's really part of the craft that's not tapped into our physical self as much. There's so much focus on the tools, even with the books, like you mentioned, the Tools of the Witch series and that kind of thing. There's so much focus on the things of witchcraft and not so much on the witch, who is the center focus and where the magic actually originates.
Yes.
I think you did a beautiful job of bringing that concept back to the front and saying, you know, look, this is what you need, really. don't have to go out and buy a lot of fancy stuff. It's within you. They just help to enhance.
Yes.
And I think that's something that gets lost a lot of the time in translation of this day of internet and things.
I could feel like we're kind of hitting that golden mean, because, you know, look at early modern paganism, right? They're like sort of the hippies, and like we're out in the woods and we're trying drugs and we're doing all sorts of stuff and, you know, kind of all psychedelic. And be running around naked, which is great. And then, like, you know, in the 90s and early,
well,
I was
my
like,
case.
I'm like, okay, sunscreen, there are ticks, there are mosquitoes. All right. But that's me. And then on the other side,
just jiggling around.
And then we have this sort of kind of hyper, like, everything must be super academic. And like, well, there are merits to both of these things. Let's find somewhere in the middle where we can be of the mind, of the spirit, and of the body together.
It's that connection, that mind-body-spirit connection that brings us closer to each other, to nature, and to deity, I think, in terms of our practice. So for sure, for sure. Well, Laura, do you have anything that you want to tell us about or anything you want to add?
We're coming up. So Anatomy of a Witch comes out officially on June 8th. Okay. And so you can get
Mama's birthday.
Yay! Mom's a Gemini.
Yeah, definitely a Gemini.
And so that's, you know, people ask, like, where can you get it? Like, well, I always recommend your local metaphysical shop. You know, check your local indie bookstores that will have it, because it's published through Llewellyn, so it's available everywhere. There is going to be an audiobook as well. I don't know when that's going to be released. I am not narrating it, but I did get to pick the narrator for this one.
Oh, good.
So that's better than the last one, but that's all I'm going to say about that. And and I'll have it available on my website, and I'm probably going to do some sort of like virtual book release thing too. I haven't quite figured out.
I was actually going to ask about that. I was going to say, in this day of, you know, COVID, and a lot, unfortunately, a lot of the smaller bookshops have closed. I think COVID's closed a lot of the businesses that we don't know if they're going to reopen. Do you foresee more of the book tours being virtual in nature?
I kind of hope not.
I hope not either, because I really think it's important for the author to get out and connect with the audience. Plus, I like seeing people and meeting people.
Yeah, I love teaching. You know, the Zoom, especially where I'm able to see other people, has gotten me through, though it's more exhausting than a physical space workshop. I know I am really happy that it's far more accessible for so many people and more affordable. So I'm going to continue doing virtual workshops and doing video content on YouTube that's free and stuff through Patreon. So there's a whole realm that I'm going to keep doing that. But I really do, and keeping tabs with all of my friends who are running shops too.
Nope. It kind of cut off there. Are you still there? Oh, Laura. I think I lost Laura. No.
Well, it seems that we have had an internet crash and I have lost Ms. Zakharov, but she wants me to just tell everyone that it was good to have her on, and I very much appreciate her coming on to the Purple Mystic podcast. Down below in the description box, you will find a link to her website, so I encourage you to check it out, and thank you again for tuning in to the Purple Mystic podcast for the Modern Witch.